And the treasure, of course, Jung associates treasure with the soul, the thing to be desired, reconciliation of the unconscious with the conscious. And water stands for cleansing, rebirth, baptism, purity, and feminine wisdom. Jung writes, "The maternal significance of water is one of the clearest interpretations of symbols in the whole field of mythology, and he instances Mithras, Christ, and Aphrodite."
We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land, water, and sky country on which this podcast was developed, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. The Zone of the Pokies Addict was a talk given to the C.G. Jung Society of Melbourne by Tim Faulkner in 2009. My name is Dana Kavila. Welcome to Season 4 of the podcast. The speaker for this podcast episode is Tim Faulkner, a transpersonal counsellor and hypnotherapist. Between 1996 and 2010, he chaired Know the Odds, Inc., a charitable organisation that provided education aiming to prevent the harmful effects of problem gambling. Tim also served as a committee member for the C.G. Jung Society of Melbourne, with major contributions to the sound engineering for committee events. This lecture discusses electronic gaming machines, known as pokies in Australia, slot machines in the United States of America, and fruit machines in the United Kingdom. It explores their use of symbols, how players may be entranced by the promise of spiritual connection and let down by the lack of revelation. Regulations surrounding electronic gaming machines vary greatly around the world and continue to be the subject of fierce political and social debate in Australia. Please note that at the end of the lecture, we have also included the answers to a couple of audience questions. Before we begin, I would also like to alert listeners that this lecture contains references to childhood sexual assault.
This lecture is divided into four parts. First, I want to talk very briefly about gaming machine problem gambling. The second part concentrates on symbolism. I'll briefly recount how I became interested in gaming machine panels and how this led to my interest in Jungian psychology. Then we examine Jung's explanation of archetypes, archetypal symbols, and symbolic syntax. Having done that, we'll consider some panels in terms of their symbols, symbolic syntax, and archetypal themes. The third part examines escape problem gambling as ritual and examines the interaction between symbols, trance, and sacrifice. Church ritual is contrasted with escape problem gambling on the machines. Finally, and this is the most important thing, we look at five recommendations for more effective treatment arising out of these materials. In Victoria, over 4 out of 5 problem gamblers name gaming machines as their favourite form of play. 78% of men and 96% of women who attended Gamblers Help, around about 2000, the study, who attended Gamblers Help played gaming machines. Now, there are two types of gaming machine problem gamblers. There are action problem gamblers and escape problem gamblers. The action gamblers, this talk is not about them. They're the old-fashioned problem gamblers who gamble for excitement and who gamble to win money, and they move from machine to machine and they play linked jackpots because they want the big win. As they lose more and more money, they need to win big amounts to get them back in the black again, and so they indulge in chasing, increasing their bets in order to try and catch up. This type of activity is archetypal, and there are gods who reflect this: Gad, Meni, Tyche, and Fortuna. As fascinating as a study of these would be, these action gamblers and the associated myths and gods are not the focus of tonight's talk. there are also escape gamblers. The escape problem gamblers are the people we're talking about tonight. They're very different to the action gamblers. They don't play for excitement, but as Professor Beau Bernard of the University of Las Vegas said in an ABC interview, they play for a morphine-like anaesthetisation. That's the way he described it. They play one or two themed machines, and the time on the machine is important to them. The money is important to them, but as Charles Livingston, who I'll mention later, showed very clearly in his commodification of interiority study, its importance lies in the fact that it buys them time on the machine. Professor Beau Bernard said in an interview on the ABC, quite honestly, very rarely is this for addicts. He's talking about the escape problem gamblers, about money. I cannot tell you how many patients we have had who play the pokies and who say they used to get really frustrated when they hit jackpots because that bumped them out of a zone, because it slowed me down. Somebody had to come over and pay them. The point is, escape gambling is not gambling in the traditional sense. Gambling involves money, and gambling is for money. If the people using the machines are not playing to win money, what are they doing? It's not gambling in the accepted definition. According to the Gambling Impact Society of New South Wales, 70% of escape gamblers are women, and only 10% of women are action gamblers. Until 2004, I knew no more about symbols than anybody else. There'd been a big scandal in the United States known as the Slots for Tots scandal, where people in the United States were concerned about cartoon graphics on the machines enticing children. I became concerned about the impact of gaming machine graphics on Australian children. I was walking down the street in the city and I looked through a full-length plate glass window and I was face to face with a gaming machine with a unicorn on it. This was an illuminated panel. It was the Unicorn Dreaming Machine. When I say I was face to face, that's not quite correct. The panel was a child's eye level. So I thought to myself, what do children think of unicorns? And I did a Google search on unicorns children and of course got a very large number of hits. This is just one of the slides from the first 30. What do you know about unicorns? Unicorns have horns, unicorns are pretty, unicorns are magic, unicorn horns are magic and can heal you from being sick and so forth. So I thought, well, this is what children understand about unicorns. And just to consider the sign again, it was low down, close to the street, bright colours, surrealistic, dream world, magic, purity, love, safety, healing, nurturing, trustworthy, respectful. Those were the sorts of messages that this machine was giving. Now, I recall that Garby Byrne, a problem gambling counsellor, had mentioned childhood sexual abuse in connection with some of her clients. And so I did another Google search, adding the words sexually abused. In other words, unicorn children sexually abused. Now, that's a rough and ready way of establishing correlations. Nevertheless, Google's quite useful for it. It is distorted in the case of unicorns for reasons I won't go into here. But there were 15,000 hits and some of the entries. Unicorns is my way of trying to regain what was lost in my childhood. He believes that sexually abused children are initially attractive and so on. I began to see in internet hits that survivors of sexual abuse were mentioning unicorns. They were either being used by those survivors or by treatment providers. One site was the Mystical Unicorn site, run by Noreen. On her website, she explains how she had suffered abuse as a child and had gained a lot of comfort from visualising unicorns and so on. There are a number of these unicorn websites and New Age, probably described as noble animal websites on the internet. I emailed Noreen, who said she had had feedback from several individuals who were abused as children and who had found themselves drawn to unicorns without knowing why. And it dawned on me, and this all happened gradually, that it wasn't just children who were using the symbols, but the symbols were used by adults who were suffering continuing distress. Experts in Jungian psychology and symbolism probably think me slow, but you must understand I knew virtually nothing about symbols. I came from a legal and hard science background, and I was simply following the trail. Well, I went back to Gabby Byrne, and she said the machines my clients are mentioning are Dolphins and Sweethearts. So I went back and did a search on the dolphin theme, that is dolphin children sexually abused, and got 144,000 hits, a higher correlation than unicorns. So these were the sort of web pages I was getting. Dolphin medicine controlling child sexual, dolphin medicine controlling child sexual. One child was found with a stuffed dolphin. She was being stalked by a pedophile, and she was at a fete, and she won a stuffed animal, and she chose a stuffed dolphin, and that was found with her body. Mariska Hartigay, she's in Law & Order SVU, which is an American series about police who catch sex offenders. She helped run the Joyful Dolphin Foundation, where sexually abused children swim with dolphins as a healing method. These materials obviously raised the question as to whether the use of dolphins on gaming machines posed a heightened risk to survivors of childhood sexual abuse. I spoke to a counsellor with experience of sexually abused children, and she said to me that they sounded like archetypes. This led me to Mary Duffy, then president of the society, and she put me in touch with Claire French. And Claire French recommended that I read Serlo's Dictionary of Symbols. I read Serlo and I began to learn to suspend my Age of Enlightenment way of thinking and think like the scientists 400 years ago. I was able to see the world in a more natural, intuitive way, a world in which scientific truth and psychological truth coincided. Gubby's statement that a number of her clients were playing the Dolphin Treasure Machine and the Sweethearts Machine was the first piece of evidence that the machine symbols were playing a special role in generating problem gambling. This was the first of a number of pieces of evidence that started to accumulate. They didn't come in all at once, they came in incrementally. I spoke to a treatment provider at the Flinders Medical Centre and I asked, have you found any correlation between the machines played and the problem gamblers you are treating? She replied that 80% of the men she was treating and 90% of the women were playing virtually exclusively one machine, and that machine was Dolphin Treasure, one of the machines mentioned by Gabi. I carried out my own analysis of the symbols on the gaming machines, looking at different gaming machine panels and analysing the symbols. The analysis of the symbols confirmed that Dolphin Treasure and Sweethearts were a problem. Also, Unicorn Dreaming, though I did not think the syntax of Unicorn Dreaming was as powerful as the others. Oh, there were others as well. I was contacted by Dr. Charles Livingston from La Trobe University. He had interviewed a number of gaming machine problem gamblers and written a paper titled Desire and the Consumption of Danger. What these problem gamblers were telling Charles was Queen of the Nile, Dolphin Treasure, Adonis and Sweethearts. Charles described their activity as the seeking of a moment of apparent immersion in the possibility of the abyss, a connection with the almost infinite, a reflection of interiority, an economy of meaning unlike the savage ant, heteronomous economy more commonly experienced. I found a table at the back of a report from the Victorian Department of Justice, the Loved Ones Number 3 study. There was no analysis of it, as far as I could see, just the table there. In that study, they asked 77 problem gamblers, what is your favourite machine, and tabulated the results. 17 had no favourite machine. Of the remaining 60 who had a favourite machine, 13 played Sweethearts, 8 played Dolphin Treasure, 8 played Adonis, 7 played Queen of the Nile, 5 played Black Rhino, which I've missed, 4 played Geisha, 4 played Indian Dreaming, and 3 played Moons and Unicorns, which is Unicorn Dreaming. Subsequent conversations with a number of problem gamblers have confirmed these machines. For example, I spoke at a conference at the Richmond Town Hall in 2007. At that conference, three persons present identified themselves as problem gamblers and each played only one machine. Two played only Sweethearts 2 and the other played only Queen of the Nile. Freud was aware of unconscious contents that could not be explained by the experience of the dreamer. He referred to them as archaic remnants. Jung explained Freud's archaic remnants as follows. My views about the archaic remnants, which I call archetypes or primordial images, have been constantly criticised by people who lack a sufficient knowledge of the psychology of dreams and of mythology. The term archetype is often misunderstood as meaning certain definite mythological images or motifs, but these are nothing more than conscious representations. It would be absurd to assume that such variable representations could be inherited. The archetype is a tendency, I'll repeat that, the archetype is a tendency to form such representations of a motive, representations that can vary a great deal in detail without losing their basic pattern. Put simply, the mind seeks out symbols from its environment to fit into archetypal patterns. Thus, for example, the goddess archetype will appear in one civilization as Isis, in another as Sophia, in another as the Virgin Mary. And there are some symbols that are particularly potent. Jung writes, there are many symbols, however, among them the most important, that are not individual but are collective in their nature and origin. These are chiefly religious images. Jung made the point that all the energy and interest devoted today by Western man to science and technology were, by ancient man, once devoted to mythology. Talking about archetypal symbols, Jung says, the archetypes, when they appear, have a distinctly numinous character, numinous spiritual character, if you like, which can only be described as spiritual. Speaking of this numinosity, Jung observes, it mobilizes philosophical and religious convictions in the very people who deemed themselves miles above any such fits of weakness. And Jung talks about the symbolic life. Man is in need of a symbolic life, but we have no symbolic life. Have you got a corner somewhere in your houses where you perform the rites, as you can see in India? Even the very simple houses there have at least a curtained corner where the members of the household can lead the symbolic life, where they can make their new vows or meditations. We don't have it. Only the symbolic life can express the need of the soul, the daily need of the soul, mind you. And because people have no such thing, they can never step out of this mill, this awful, grinding, banal life in which they are nothing but. In Symbols of Transformation, Jung writes that the religious myth is one of man's greatest and most significant achievements, giving the security and inner strength so he is not crushed by the monstrousness of the universe. The life, death, rebirth cycle of myths represent the longing to attain rebirth through the return to the womb and to become immortal like the sun. Jung writes, the ark, chest, barrel, ship, etc. is an analogy of the womb, like the sea into which the sun sinks for rebirth. And this list here is taken from Wikipedia. I've added Noah. That was an introduction to explain how I became interested in symbolism and give a little bit of Jung's explanation about archetypal symbols. Symbols can create associations with stored images and emotions. Symbols carry messages behind them which speak directly to the unconscious. Now, for example, with that one, some of you might have seen this before, some of you might tweet to, does that remind anybody of anything? It's similar to the Hogwarts Express, the same sort of old engine, red boiler and all the rest of it, viewed from the same perspective as Harry Potter first sees it. But there's a whole lot which is carried with that, because what does the Hogwarts Express do? The Hogwarts Express is a container, a vehicle that carries Harry Potter from a life of ignominy, suffering and confinement to an exciting world of adventure, a world in which he is a valued member with unique qualities, a spiritual world holding out the promise of an afterlife. Essentially, the Hogwarts Express is a vehicle for rebirth. Written language has rules of syntax, and so does symbolism. The following are some examples of syntactical rules. Left and right. To go towards the left is to go towards the unconscious and the past. To the right is to face consciousness and the future. And these two panels show Adam and Eve expelled from the Garden of Eden. The past, the left, is closed and they are forced to the right, the future. The fighting Temeraire is towed up the Thames to be broken up. This is J.M.W. Turner's painting. Note the movement is left to right, towards the future and death, symbolised by the setting orange-red sun. The fighting Temeraire is archetypal symbolism at its peak. But I want to make a very important point here. You don't need to know the story or myth behind an archetypal symbol for it to have effect. The archetypal symbol will resonate with the archetype. In 2005, this painting was voted the greatest painting in a British art gallery, and it just speaks for itself. Up and down, light and dark. The upper sky is associated with light and the divine. The lower regions are associated with darkness and death. It's only logical in symbolic terms that animals and people are made more divine by adding wings to them. For example, angels have wings, and if you add wings to a horse, it becomes a Pegasus, gets elevated. Encircling. Serlow, Dictionary of Symbols, writes under the entry circumference, enclosing beings, objects, or figures within a circumference has a double meaning. From within, it implies limitation and definition. From without, it is seen to represent the defence of the physical and psychic contents themselves, the defence, that is, against the perils of the soul threatening it from without. So the castle moat keeps the inhabitants safe but confined. The snake around Lilith protects her but also confines her. So let's return to the gaming machines. I mentioned before that there were two types of gaming machine gamblers: action gamblers, who played for money, and escape gamblers, who played for what has been described as a morphine-like anaesthetisation. Just as there are two types of gaming machine problem gamblers, so there are two types of machines distinguished by their symbolism. These are some examples of action gaming machines. They are solar, masculine, active, jocular, direct, competitive, speaking of logic and money. These are the things we normally associate with gambling. This is the exciting, money-oriented, masculine excitement we expect from gambling. That's the sort of machine there. Count money, haywire, lobster mania, Austin Powers, things like that, excitement and money and humour. The other machines, the spiritual machines, are lunar, feminine, passive, reflective, subtle, nurturing, projecting spirituality and love. A different flavour to them, a feminine spiritual flavour rather than a masculine money and excitement flavour. The colours used, and there are exceptions, but the colours are mainly pink, violet, purple and blue, with yellow as denoting spiritual power. Red, the colour of action, tends to be avoided, and green and brown, which are earthing colours, also tend to be avoided. Though, as I say, there are exceptions, but for a purpose. So these are examples of the escape gambling machines. Those are some of them there, and that's another lot of them there. We'll now look at three of the most potent life, death, rebirth machine panels and explain the symbols, symbolic syntax, and archetypal meaning. We'll look at Dolphin Treasure first. When you're examining machine panels, you want to, or any graphic, archetypal graphic, you want to look at what symbols are used in them, the symbols, and secondly, you want to look at the symbolic syntax. Symbols are like sentences, or panels are like sentences. You ask, what words are they using? And then what is the juxtaposition of those words? Looking at Dolphin Treasure, that's the big one in South Australia, though Indian Dreaming is apparently becoming big over there. The first thing is dolphins. Dolphins are a primary totem of the New Age religion. They're important in Christian mythology and, in fact, in many mythologies. They are recognised as healing animals, and I've already mentioned the human dolphin therapy. Here you have two dolphins swimming in harmony. As Serlo says, if you have two dolphins swimming clockwise, one up and one down, chasing each other, that represents evolution and devolution. But where the two are swimming together, they're swimming in harmony. That's harmony and cooperation. Now they're swimming back in time. As we've seen, to go towards the left is to go towards the unconscious and the past. To go towards the right is to face consciousness and the future. So these dolphins are swimming back in time. They're swimming out of the darkness, which we associate with evil and death, towards the light. Although they're not swimming upwards, they're swimming more or less horizontally, they're swimming towards the sun, and there's nevertheless an uplifting feeling. And there are halos, this big halo connecting the light and dark, and the dolphins themselves are surrounded by halos. Normally their undersides would be dark in the shadow. And of course they're blue, they're not grey. You associate grey with ash and death. A little bit of piece of seaweed they're swimming towards. Purple indicates active spirituality. And the treasure, of course, Jung associates treasure with the soul, the thing to be desired, reconciliation of the unconscious with the conscious. And water stands for cleansing, rebirth, baptism, purity, and feminine wisdom. Jung writes, the maternal significance of water is one of the clearest interpretations of symbols in the whole field of mythology, and he instances Mithras, Christ, and Aphrodite. The panel evokes the myth of the night sea journey, where the hero, like the sun, travels underneath the water to be reborn in the east. Note the whiteness of the sun here, a young sun. Horus, not Osiris. This machine is Sweethearts 2. This is the panel having the highest proportion of problem gamblers in the Loved Ones number 3 study. The heart is, of course, the central element of the panel. The heart is a prominent symbol in all religions. It was the only organ left by the ancient Egyptians in the body after embalming. It symbolises the inner personality and emotional life, and hearts are used as symbols of emotional healing. Here you can see the heart being used in the Christian religion, the Sacred Heart being one of the key symbols of the Catholic Church. There are two devotions, one to the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the other to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Hearts appear in other places. The Purple Heart was established by George Washington. Washington was a Mason and would have known about symbolism. And it's also been chosen for use in the logo of the child sexual abuse organisation Bravehearts. In children's sweets, Sweethearts, pastel coloured, you probably remember those if you've ever had them, and they had a very strong musky smell too, which would take you back. Cherubim, you have these Renaissance cherubim, baby angels, which are often used in association with the Virgin Mary. So you have these baby angels. Sweetheart uses a lot of Christian symbolism. It's got the cherubim, but it has the purple heart, pinky purple heart, symbols of the sacred hearts. This panel, like Dolphin Treasure, symbolises rebirth. It symbolises re-entry into the past, the heart, the container, the womb, and then the rebirth of the spirit through the cherubim blowing out through trumpets. In symbols of transformation, Jung refers to John chapter 3, verse 4, where Jesus speaks to Nicodemus. The way Jung interprets it, Jesus was saying to Nicodemus, I quote, "To be born of water simply means to be born of the mother's womb. To be born of the spirit means to be born of the fructifying breath of the wind." So spirit is also synonymous with breath. Now we move on to Queen of the Nile. This is a New Age religious panel based on ancient Egypt. The Egyptian symbolism is very powerful and it guided spiritual life in Egyptian civilization for millennia. The panel is dominated by the Pharaonic queen goddess. The queen is referred to on the machine as Cleopatra, but Cleopatra was an incarnation of the goddess Isis. The Penguin Dictionary of Symbols describes Isis. The most illustrious of all ancient Egyptian goddesses, Isis is depicted searching for her murdered brother and husband, Osiris, whom she restored to life with her breath, or suckling her son Horus, or in funeral processions, protecting the dead in the shadow of her wings and bringing them back to life. All esoteric groups regarded her as the mystagogue who held the secrets of life and death and resurrection. The Ankh was the symbol of her boundless power. She's very feminine, spiritual, powerful and protective. She's wearing amulets of gold and lapis lazuli, and blue is the spiritual colour for the Egyptians. The Eye of Horus represents protection and the Scarab represents resurrection, protection and power. And note the position of the sun as a third eye. The panel depicts evening, the orange sky and the setting sun. The queen goddess is watching over the dying of the solar masculine day and the approaching night, lunar, feminine and occult. In symbols of transformation, Jung explains this overcoming of death, rebirth, the myth of Isis, Osiris, Horus, the voyage of the sun, where the sun sets in the west and is reborn in the east, where it is handed by the western goddess to the eastern goddess by barge. Note the movement of the panel from right to left, like Dolphin Treasure and Sweethearts too. The goddess is in the left of the picture, ready to receive the dying yellow sun, Osiris, and bring him back to life. The three panels, though at first quite different, are nevertheless all similar as life, death, rebirth panels. As Jung says, people will take material from their environment that fits in with the archetypes, that resonates with the archetypes. So in one case, the night sea crossing may be a barge, in another case it may be in a tree or the underworld, but the underlying theme of the unconscious is the same, the desire for rebirth. All three panels have, as I've said, right to left movement back into the past, and all three panels have a vehicle, the dolphin, the heart, and the goddess. The geisha is different and nastier. It's a reenactment machine for women who have been abused. There are three main elements in this panel. the geisha, the mandala, and the dragon. Considering the geisha is a modern-day archetype of the submissive. You have the bowed head, you have the flowers. Flowers stand for transitory beauty. You have this very confined, restricted geisha. Now we consider the mandala. You have the centre as the soul, the five-sided figure which represents the soul or person. The purple inner circle, which stands for power, spirituality, and sublimation. You have the flowers which tie the mandala into the geisha. And then you have this blood red, ox blood outer part of the mandala. Blood is the colour of sacrifice, symbol of sacrifice. You have the dragon which is encircling the mandala, confining and controlling the geisha's soul and drawing it away. As I mentioned, encirclement involves two things, protection and confinement, but you wouldn't want to be protected by this dragon. The soul is held in the past, the left, and it's a nasty dragon. It doesn't have wings, and more like a snake. Serlo writes of the dragon, "It is a kind of amalgam of elements taken from various animals that are particularly aggressive and dangerous, such as serpents, crocodiles, and lions, as well as prehistoric animals." And Jung writes, "The annual sacrifice of a maiden to the dragon is perhaps the ideal sacrifice on a mythological level." Before leaving the geisha, it's interesting to note that the panel is a striking graphic representation of an archetypal self-care system described by the Jungian psychoanalyst Donald Kalchin in his book The Inner World of Trauma, Archetypal Defences of the Personal Spirit. Kalchin found that in the case of severe childhood trauma, the psyche could split into a daemonic caretaker, in this case the dragon, which protects or persecutes its vulnerable partner, sometimes keeping it imprisoned within, in this case the star representing the soul, leading to a major resistance to all unguarded, spontaneous expressions of self in the world, represented by the geisha. Kalchin adds, "The second finding is the seemingly perverse fact that the victim of psychological trauma continually finds himself or herself in life situations where he or she is re-traumatized. As much as he or she wants to change, as hard as he or she tries to improve life or relationships, something more powerful than the ego continually undermines progress and destroys hope. It is as though the persecutory inner world somehow finds its outer mirror in repeated self-defeating reenactments, almost as if the individual were possessed by some diabolical power or pursued by a malignant fate." One problem gambler wrote to me and said, "By the way, I want you to know that the abuse I received at the hand of my father, who was also very loving, was not sexual, but psychological and physical. And just to let you know that I think you have a really clear idea of the reality of the messages, I was addicted to the geisha machine for quite a while." Before I leave geisha, this is a picture drawn by a young man, a sexual abuse survivor, childhood sexual abuse survivor, depicting the part of his life where he was abused. You can see the similarities with the dragon and soul of the geisha. His soul is represented by a purple fog, or it may be that the fog conceals his soul. This soul is surrounded, encircled by malevolent forces, including a dragon. And that was just drawn quite spontaneously. It shows I don't know whether there are any art therapists here, but it certainly is a good advertisement for that. Now we'll move on to ritual and then deal with implications for treatment. Gaming machine ritual combines archetypal symbols, rhythm-induced trance, surrealism, and sacrifice. Archetypal symbols have already been discussed. The zone described by the problem gamblers would appear to be simply an ergotropic trance induced by rhythm, visual, auditory, and tactile. Trance states, we normally think of trance states as being induced by relaxation, but trance states can also be induced and induced by activity. We shouldn't refer to the state of the problem gamblers as the zone when it clearly appears to be a trance induced through rhythm. There's a whole science dealing with trance and hypnosis, and yet we seem to be looking at the zone as though it were some new phenomenon instead of a phenomenon practiced for thousands of years by every indigenous population on the planet, as far as I'm aware. A person in a trance does not have full control of his or her mind. One of the features of a trance is enhanced suggestibility. This enhanced suggestibility, the lowering of the entranced person's ego, presents invaluable opportunities for healing in the hands of a practiced and ethical treatment professional. However, a person in a trance is vulnerable, and this vulnerability should not be taken advantage of. Supernatural quality. Apart from the numinous quality of the archetypal symbolism, the machines have a supernatural quality. The industry calls it near miss. It's also called starved reels. I don't have time to go into it, but the machines look as though they should be paying out far more than they do. I'll move on to sacrifice. There's also the issue of sacrifice. A sacrifice is central to all religions. The Eucharist, for example, is a sacrificial ritual. Serlo writes under sacrifice, to sacrifice what is esteemed is to sacrifice oneself, and the spiritual energy thereby acquired is proportional to the importance of what is lost. All forms of suffering can be sacrificial if wholeheartedly sought and accepted. Sacrifice, which quite literally means, I think David Tacey made this point in one of the lectures here, means to make sacred, involves a bargain where spiritual energy is acquired through suffering. It is not just payment of money. The critical thing is that all types of suffering can translate into sacrifice. The humiliation of criticism from family, friends, and counsellors, and, in the case of crime, the abasement and public disgrace of discovery, sentencing, and the imprisonment can all count on the positive side of the scale when it comes to performing sacrifice, making payment on a temporal basis for spiritual reward. The function of ritual. In Symbols of Transformation, Jung explains the function of sacrifice and prayer. The archetypal structure of the unconscious corresponds to typical life patterns. Where a distressing situation is encountered, the corresponding archetype is activated and attracts to itself the contents of consciousness. Its passing over into consciousness is felt as an illumination, a revelation, or a saving idea. Jung goes on, repeated experience of this process has had the general result that whenever a critical situation arises, the mechanism of introversion is made to function artificially. Mechanism of introversion is made to function artificially by means of ritual actions which bring about a spiritual preparation. For example, magical ceremonies, sacrifices, invocations, prayers, and such like. Now, just looking at church ritual, what prayer and ritual should do is they should induce an introverted state where conscious problems can be consciously transferred to the God image or the soul, whether you look at it in Jung's way, that the God image is within or the mind, or whether you take the view that the God image is outside. The introverted state is structured and temporary, and confession keeps the problems conscious. For the escape gambler, the gaming machine play is ritual. The machine symbol fits the constellated archetype, and the symbol has a numinous character, and the ritual action, combining archetypal symbolism, magical quality, rhythmic, tactile, visual and auditory trance induction, and sacrifice, induce inversion. Trance, perhaps, be a better word for it. The problem with gaming machine ritual is that it traps the user in an introverted state, or in a trance state. The user goes into a holding pattern. There's no reconciliation of the unconscious with the conscious, and it's a spiritual dead end. For some time, when I first discovered the archetypal symbols, I considered it was only those who suffered a deep psychological wound, such as childhood abuse, who were vulnerable, and you can see why I formed that view. I still think this is the case with geisha. However, the fear of death, whether by annihilation in the case of a withdrawing character, or devouring or dismemberment in the case of a seeking character, is obviously widespread, if not universal, and it's not limited to the seriously psychologically disordered. As Edinger points out, the story of Adam and Eve and Pandora point to the inevitable consequences of becoming conscious. Pain and suffering and death do exist prior to the birth of consciousness, but if there's no consciousness to experience them, they don't exist psychologically. So in other words, when we became conscious, when we became sentient, we took on ourselves the fear of death because we were able to conceptualise that. And it's older people who are more affected by the fear of death. As Jung pithily observes, just as the young neurotic is afraid of life, so the older one shrinks back from death. So finally, dealing with implications for treatment. I think the first implication for treatment is that, considering what machines are played, the style of play, are they action gambling machines or are they escape gambling machines, can firstly assist us in distinguishing between action gamblers and escape gamblers. And I think that's pretty, we may have to take quite different approaches to treatment for those two. Secondly, we can use the symbols and the symbolic themes of the panels, like dreams, to give us insight into the unconscious archetypes that have been constellated and of the psychological trauma or need the client is trying to address. So, for example, dolphin treasure may indicate a desire for cleansing and rebirth, and you want to look at what's behind that. Sweethearts too, a desire for rebirth, or some sort of connection with a lost loved one. Queen of the Nile, desire for rebirth, and so on. Yes, a geisha, obviously, reenactment of childhood trauma, not only sexual but also physical or psychological, also for reenactment of existing domestic violence or extreme domestic discord. The third suggestion I'd make is that since we're dealing with trance induction, it would make sense to use trance techniques in client treatment. If the clients are playing these machines in a trance state, we should at least, as part of the treatment, be putting them into a trance state in order to engage with the same person or the same part of the mind that they are using when they're playing the machines. In particular, a combination of dream analysis based on the symbols, trance induction, and a technique called focusing, if not focusing is, could be most effective. And using the symbols on the reel as an introduction into the counselling process, as you would a dream. I've met escape gamblers who have cured themselves through spiritual connection, and this is from one email I received. On a personal level, she talked for a little while about her ministry work, and then she went on a personal level, I have been an escape gambler in the past, and your talk helped me to understand why I chose the Hearts and Geisha machines, and I just thought it was because I liked the way they played and their special feature pays. But thankfully, after my prayer for deliverance and healing, the gambling desire went by the way, and that is probably because of the healing from the abuse and past. Given the spiritual quality of the machines, Jung's advice to one of the founders of Gamblers Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill W., the advice he gave was spiritus contra spiritum. He said you've got to fight spirit with spirit, may be particularly relevant. And if the client already has a religion, well, that should provide at least part of the framework for recovery. Jung cautioned, of course, cautioned against disturbing any existing religious values. You shouldn't be trying to imprint some new religious values over somebody who already has a set of values. Finally, it's important to inform the client as to the meaning of the symbols and their effect on his or her unconscious. As Jung wrote in The Psychology of the Transference, therapy aims at strengthening the conscious mind. And further down he writes, in such a situation, understanding acts like a lifesaver. It integrates the unconscious, and gradually there comes into being a higher point of view, where both conscious and unconscious are represented. It then proves the invasion by the unconscious was rather like the flooding of the Nile. It increases the fertility of the land. In conclusion, I'll just finish on one comment from the introduction to the Encyclopedia of Symbols by Rudolf Becker. He writes, usually, discussing symbols is a benign activity, one that points the way to the intellectual treasures of the past and revitalizes them. But unscrupulous use of this coded world can trap people. The oranges and lemons were originally brought in because the machines were designed as fruit machines, that they were supposed to pay out in fruit or in boiled lollies rather than money. So that's why they used oranges and lemons and plums and things like that. But machines have been using symbols for different symbols for some time. But the point you raise is pertinent in that these symbols don't really have, a lot of these symbols don't have anything to do with gambling. The dolphins don't gamble. I don't think dolphins have ever been associated with gambling. You have, if they wanted a goddess on the machine, not that I think that would be a good idea, but I mean they could have taken Tyche or Fortuna, Lady Luck. There may be a Lady Luck machine. But certainly, why do they have Isis? The goddess who rules over the looks after the dead and the resurrection. Hearts, well, they've had hearts on playing cards. Originally they had cups and they changed them to hearts. But even so, this has got a lot more than just a heart. The reels themselves, one of the manufacturers, I think it was Konami, had the Japanese machine maker had reels that would flash subliminal character winning combinations while the reels were spinning just 60th of a second or whatever. That was picked up and described as a mistake and quickly fixed. Of course, in one way, these symbols are subliminal, or I haven't described them as a cult, but maybe that's another, some would. But the actual spinning reels, the actual symbols on the reels, that they take these, they take things like pyramids and so on, and from the graphic and put them on the reels. But I haven't made a study of those. The only thing that does intrigue me is, having spoken to problem gamblers and non-problem gamblers, the non-problem gamblers refer to the Dolphin Treasure as the Dolphin Machine, but the problem gamblers seem to refer to it as the Treasure Machine. Really interesting. I mean, because to me, the dolphins stand out far more than the treasure, but they've always been addictive, because what makes them so addictive is they have different numbers of symbols on the different, of each symbol on the different reels. So, for example, you'll have six kings on reel one, six kings on reel two, one king on reel three. People assume that the reels are the same. So if they get two kings, they say, oh, I just missed getting three kings. I mean, it describes it very simply. It's a bit like saying Louis Armstrong blows air through a hollow piece of tubing, but that's essentially what they do. So they've always, even since around 1900, they have still been very, very addictive, because they trick the player into thinking the odds are much better than they really are. But in terms of symbols, they started off with oranges and lemons and things. I think they went, probably by the 1930s, they were using a range of other symbols. Card symbols, of course, are good, because people look at the card symbols, the aces and kings and so on, and assume the reels are the same. With the very early ones, you realised they weren't. But there were a number of innovations that they brought in. Another thing called the Telnaus patent, called mapping, where the symbols stop above, are programmed to stop above or below, far more likely to stop above or below the pay line. But that doesn't work here, because we've got naughty line. But we still have the real starving, we call it. Yeah. So, and one of the sad things about it is that you may have people who are caught up in a cult, but at least they've got some human contact. These are inhuman, in that it's being done by a machine. Thank you. Yes, the drug that they use with the Parkinson's disease patients certainly does seem to have. There seems to be a lot of evidence that it does have an effect of stimulating increases in gambling and also sexual activity. Well, I think these machines haven't been, the spiritual dimension of these machines hasn't been recognised until I raised it. And yes, well, I think nobody wants to upset the apple cart, and nobody's really raised this. Nobody's really raised it. That's the point. Yes, well, I'm certainly trying to raise it now. It has been raised with the Productivity Commission, and I think the Productivity Commission is having a look at it. The industry have said that my arguments are a masquerade. So we'll just have to see what happens.
We hope you enjoyed Tim's talk on the symbolic aspects of electronic gaming machines, where he explored the risks for vulnerable players and also how these same symbols, when explored in a safe, therapeutic space, can result in personal healing. Thank you to our listeners, and we hope to welcome you in a live lecture or course soon. You can find our monthly lecture topics and further information about our courses on our website at jungsocietymelbourne.com. And we invite you to sign up for our complimentary newsletter for regular updates. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.